You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you live today. Sorry to feed you a delayed show or a best-of show yesterday, but we were slammed. D.C. was just slammed. And I think I was the only person who could have made it in. And it would have been a challenge for me. So Jim lives out in Virginia, and Shane and Danielle up in Maryland, and it was just a wild ride. So, but we are live today, and it being Friday, and it being the first hour of Friday, it is time for our Brunch with Bernie hour, Senator Bernie Sanders, for our national town hall meeting. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes. Senator Sanders, you with us?
I am right here.
Hey, Senator. So what's on your schedule, on your mind, on your plate today?
Well, we've got some snow here in Vermont as well. So, like the rest of the country, we're dealing with it.
Yep.
But actually, it's quite nice. We got out of Washington on Wednesday because of the snow. But there are a lot of things that are taking place, and let me briefly go over them. In fact, on Wednesday, on Tuesday, I believe it was, the president signed a minimum wage increase for employees who work for federal contractors. It turns out there are a whole lot of folks out there who are working for companies who have contracts with the United States government who are making abysmally low wages. In late September, I and 14 others, members of the Senate, signed a letter to the president and said that the taxpayers of this country should not be paying horrendously low wages to workers. And the result is the State of the Union, the president announced that he was going to increase wages for all federal contract employees to at least $10.10 an hour. He signed that order on Tuesday, I think it was, and that's a good step forward. But clearly, much, much more has to be done. What we need to do now is pass a at least $10.10 minimum wage for all American workers, all American workers. Tom, one of the great crises in our economy today is not just that real unemployment, as opposed to official unemployment, that real unemployment is close to 13% youth unemployment, 20% African-American youth unemployment, 40%. Those are terrible, terrible numbers. Mm. But that what we worry about is that most of the new jobs being created in the economy are low-wage jobs. Many of them are part-time jobs. So if we raise the minimum wage from $7.25 to $10.10 an hour, we will be giving a wage increase to approximately 30 million American workers. And while 10-10 is not enough unto itself for a family to really live with dignity, it is a step forward. So we're going to continue the focus to raise the minimum wage to at least $10.10 an hour. There are states out there contemplating minimum wage rates higher than that, and I strongly support that. Furthermore, in terms of legislation that is coming up and actions that are coming up, a whole bunch of us wrote a letter to the president, who is in the process now of developing his budget. And while his budget is not defining, in other words, as often as not, the Congress takes the budget and says thank you and does what it wants to do, it does give us an important sense of where the president is coming from and what he is prepared to fight for and fight against. In his last budget, the president put in language which supported a cut to Social Security, which is called the chain CPI, which is rather a significant cut in terms of reducing COLAs, cost of living adjustments, for seniors, for people with disabilities, for disabled vets. And what we are urging him right now is that in a time when we have reduced the federal deficit from some $1.4 to around $700 billion, cut it in half over the last 5 years, and that type of cut is unprecedented in the last 50 years, what we are saying to the president is focus on the needs of the middle class and working families, protect working families, do not put language in your budget which will cut Social Security, will cut Medicare, will cut Medicaid. We have a whole bunch of senators who are saying that. For the last number of years, as a result of Bush's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, tax breaks for the rich, Medicare Part D, this country racked up a huge deficit, $1.4 trillion. We've made progress in addressing that. The focus of attention right now has got to be on the disappearing middle class, the understanding that median family income has gone down by $5,000 since 1999, the reality that unemployment is way too high, and that, you know, there are God knows how many people listening to this program right now who are worrying about how they're going to buy food for their kids, how they're going to pay their mortgage, put gas in their car. Those are the issues that we've got to be focusing on right now. As I think everybody knows, the wealthiest people in this country are doing phenomenally well, and we have more income and wealth disparity today than at any time in the history of this country since 1928, and a worse situation, a more unfair situation than any other major country on earth. So the focus of attention right now is protect the middle class and working families, create jobs, raise the minimum wage, make college affordable, and do not cut into the social safety network, which means protect Social Security, in fact, expand it. But so that is our request of the president. Furthermore, I am, as I think many listeners know, the chairman of the Senate Veterans Committee. We hope to have on the floor this week, not this week, but next week when we return, a comprehensive veterans bill, which will do a whole lot to improve lives for veterans all over this country. And among other things, it expands VA eligibility. More people can get into the very good quality health care that VA provides. We're going to introduce for the first time dental care as part of VA health care. We're going to address funding issues in terms of advanced appropriations, making sure that if there's ever again a government shutdown, there will be money available to help make sure that disabled vets get the checks that they're entitled to. We're going to have language in there ending the benefits backlog. We deal with educational issues. We're going to deal with an interesting issue that has not gotten a lot of attention. Tom, as a result of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, about 2,300 men and women veterans came home unable to have families, whether they're spinal issues or genital issues. These families, many of whom want kids, are just unable to do that. And to deal with that issue is a very, very expensive process, which right now the VA does not cover. And I want to see that the VA, in fact, does cover that. And there's another veterans issue out there, which deals with caregivers. Right now, we have veterans from World War II, Vietnam, Korea, Gulf War, where wives often are taking care of their husbands, their brothers, and not getting any help at all. We want to provide some help to them. So it's a very comprehensive bill. Hope to get it on the floor when we get back, and I hope to see it pass.
That's extraordinary. Dental care.
Dental care is a big deal. You know, I'll tell you, you know, when we talk about health care, and, you know, we talk about health care a whole lot in this country, we sometimes don't see dental care as a part of health care, but it really is. Mm-hmm. And right now, except for service-connected problems, the VA does not provide dental care to veterans, and I want to change that. So we're working on that. Also, just interestingly enough, I was in Cuba just last weekend, and that was an interesting trip. We can talk about that later.
Yeah. Boy, I'd love to know your thoughts on that. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders. Actually, we'll start taking your calls for Senator Sanders right after this sticker.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz there, his free newsletter. Plus, it's a great news site. Senator, would you prefer to share your experience in Cuba or pick up calls?
Let's start with the calls.
Okay, great. Let's see here. Bill watching Free Speech TV in Kiowa, Colorado. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, my name is Bill, and I was interested in finding out if they are still looking at extending unemployment.
Yes.
If not, I'm going to have to wind up starting my Social Security because I can't live the way I am.
Bill, thanks for the question, and the answer is absolutely and positively yes. What Bill is talking about is that long-term emergency unemployment benefits expired at the beginning of the year, and Bill is, as I hear him, is one of 1.6 million Americans who have lost their extended unemployment, and the problem is within our economy today, tragically, long-term unemployment is as high as it has been for a very, very, very long time. Something like 37% of the unemployed people have not been able to find a job in 6 months. And just to cut those benefits and cut people loose and without any source of income in some cases is a moral disaster, and it is also an economic disaster. So what I would say to Bill is some of us have tried time and time and time again to pass extended unemployment. We've looked at doing it for 3 months. We've looked at doing it for a year, but we keep coming up against fierce opposition from our Republican colleagues who are very interested in giving tax breaks for billionaires and protecting corporate loopholes in the tax system, but apparently are not listening to the cries of people who are trying to feed their families and look for work. So this is a very, very serious issue. I should have mentioned that in my opening remarks, Bill. But yes, the answer is we have not given up on this issue. We're going to keep coming back, and I hope that we will be able to extend these long-term unemployment benefits.
Francie in Reagan, Tennessee. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV Satellite.
It's just such an honor to speak with you, Senator Sanders. I'm a little nervous, but
not at all. Thank you very much.
You're one of the best politicians out there. I think you are so honest, and I wish we had so many more politicians right now like you. And I know you've been doing a very good job for VA, but I wanted to know with this budget cut that Patty Murray and Ryan, Paul Ryan broke, did they do away with survivorship benefits for spouses of deceased, disabled military veterans?
No,
they did
Pardon?
Not.
No, they did not. What was in that agreement, and in defense of Patty Murray, here's the problem what we have time and time again. Nobody wants another government shutdown, wanted another government shutdown. That was devastating. Our Republican colleagues, and everybody has got to understand this, they do not want to ask the wealthiest people in this country who are doing phenomenally well to pay another nickel in taxes. They do not want to end corporate loopholes, and they want to maintain the fact that one out of four corporations in this country pays nothing in federal income taxes. We're losing huge sums of money in terms of companies stashing the money in the Cayman Islands and other tax havens. So they don't want to raise any more revenue. So the agreement that was reached to make sure that we don't have a government shutdown was not a great agreement. But it did not include the provision that Francie was talking about, to the best of my knowledge.
Thank you. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders in just a second. Stick around. 20 minutes past the hour. From the weapons of mass deception, Tom Hartman here with you. It's our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And Chris in Minneapolis, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Very well. Thank you for your introduction of Senate Joint Resolution 11, which would end corporate personhood and voter fraud, but I agree with the language, except the ratification part by the, you know, the corporate sellout legislatures of the states. But why couldn't it be like the 21st Amendment, where they say it should be ratified by convention in the several states?
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure you want to open up the U.S. Constitution to convention. You can have some devastating results if you did that. What Chris is talking about is an amendment, a constitutional amendment that I offered is, in my view, probably the most serious problem facing our country at a time when we have many, many serious problems. But whether the crisis is unemployment or low wages or affordable housing or college affordability or lack of child care or the health care situation, all of them are related to one broader issue, which is what Chris is talking about, is that is campaign finance. And right now, as a result of Citizens United Supreme Court decision, the worst decision made by a Supreme Court in many, many years, they open the floodgates of corporate money into the political process. So the result is that corporations now, under the guise of freedom of speech, can buy and control the political process. The real life impact of this is that people like the Koch brothers and others are going to spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not billions of dollars, on the political process. So when you turn on your television set and you see some very ugly negative ads coming from some organization that you never heard of, the likelihood is that it's the Koch brothers or others who are just spending unbelievably large sums of money to elect right-wing candidates for the Senate or the House or governor's office or whatever it may be. We have got to get a handle on this, because this is undermining the very foundation of American democracy. American democracy means one person, one vote. It does not mean that a handful of people can control the political process and end up actually having even more political power than either the Democratic or Republican Party, because they have unlimited sums of money. So I introduce legislation, and Chris may take issue with this or that part of it, but the bottom line is we need a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United and restore democracy to the political process.
Apropos of that, just a quick anecdote, Senator. This morning I'm reading the Financial Times online, and the third story, the front page top stories, third story is headlined, Midterm Battle for Pivotal Control of U.S. Senate Heats Up. You click on that story, there's a picture of a man at the top, along with a story about how millions, tens of millions of dollars are being spent bankrolling these attacks against Democrats in swing states. And the man whose picture is there is not a member of the Senate, it's Charles Koch.
Right. No, there was an interesting piece, and people have got to appreciate this. It is quite possible that very shortly the most powerful political organization in this country is not going to be the Democratic Party, it is not going to be the Republican Party, it is going to be the Koch brothers party, because they have unlimited sums of money. This is a family that is worth some $75 billion, one of the wealthiest families in America. And their agenda is very clear. They want to either privatize and make significant cuts in Social Security, in Medicare, in Medicaid. These folks want to do away with the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Energy. I mean, it is hard for me to imagine why a family worth $75 billion feels it necessary to go to war against the working families of this country. These people believe in abolishing the concept of the minimum wage, abolishing the concept, so that if workers in this country are in desperate shape and they have to work for $3 an hour, that's fine with them. And what they are doing is already having a huge impact on the political process. The government shutdown is largely a result of their efforts, because the moderate-type Republicans who wanted to oppose the shutdown were told that they would be forced into a well-funded primary with a well-funded opponent if they didn't go along with what the right, extreme right-wing wanted to do. And it has a powerful political impact today, because people who are opposing, being opposed by the Koch brothers, they have to raise huge sums of money. Where are they going to go to? They're going to go to other rich people. So you're seeing money playing a bigger and bigger impact in the political process, and that's why the needs of working families and the middle class are largely ignored. And it is, just extraordinarily upsetting, and it's an issue that has got to be dealt with.
Just 1 minute before the break. Charles, a quick question for Senator Sanders. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida.
Hi.
Yeah. Charles?
Hello. Yeah. I love your show, Tom. And thank you, Senator Sanders, for your time. I really appreciate you. You are a real American statesman. My question is a three-part question. Basically, Bob Corker yesterday came out railing against these workers in Tennessee trying to form a union. And as far as I'm concerned, I've always heard from the Republicans that let business take care of itself, and, you know, and that's their thing. But now it seems like he's trying to circumvent what workers are doing. And you, I don't think that's even legal for you to use the law in that way, that you want to threaten these
workers. Charles, you raise a very important question, and you're quite right. I don't think it's illegal, but I think it is terribly wrong for an elected official to get so involved in opposing the right of a worker to form a union.
Senator Bernie Sanders, we'll pick that up on the other side if you'd like, Senator. It is 28 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman program on our Brunch with Bernie hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders is town hall meeting taking your calls. Senator, was there anything from that last...
Charles from Florida was talking about Senator Corker getting involved in the union fight in Tennessee. You know, it is certainly not illegal for senators to speak out on issues, but he's wrong. He's dead wrong. The fact of the matter is that one of the reasons Senator Corker is dead wrong, one of the reasons that the middle class in this country is in rapid decline is the fact that there has been a war against unions. Unions today in the private sector represent just a very small number of folks. And that means that workers don't have a seat at the table in negotiating decent wages, and employers and corporations understand that. So over the years, they have cut wages, they have cut health care benefits, they've cut pension benefits. And by the way, when they do that, non-union workers suffer as well, because this perpetuates a race to the bottom. So if you have in a community some folks earning higher wages than other companies, non-union companies have to compete for workers by raising wages. If the unions are unable to negotiate decent contracts, everybody in the community, every worker in the community suffers. And, you know, is certainly one of the tools of the ruling class of this country, the big money interest, over the last many years has been to attack unions, to break unions, to make it harder for workers to join unions. We had a struggle just last year in the Senate. Republicans didn't even want the National Labor Relations Board to be able to function, and we had to overcome that. So, you know, my hope is that the workers in Tennessee will vote for a union, and we see an expansion in the union movement in America. It's good for, in my view, all American workers.
Bruce, in Republic, Washington, watching on Free Speech TV, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, Bruce. You're on the air with Bernie.
Okay. Senator Sanders, I'm on Social Security, and I make less than $700 a month, and I've had COLAs of $10 a month. And I've had trouble finding a place to live, so I need you to throw my hat and other people's hats into the fray to get a raise.
Okay, thank you very much, Bruce. You know, Tom, it always amazes me when folks like Bruce call in or I meet people like that. Their story is the story of millions of people. And how rarely, you know, on the media do we hear those stories. So Bruce is saying he's trying to survive on Social Security. It is very, very difficult. And he says the COLAs, the cost of living adjustments that he's been receiving in recent years have been very, very minimal. And he's absolutely correct. Actually, in the last couple of years, it has been at zero in some cases. Cost of living increases. I think last year it's all of 1.5%. What I would say to Bruce, I know this is hard for you to believe, but this is absolutely true. Every Republican and some Democrats in Congress think that the COLAs that you and other folks have received are too generous. Now, I know it's whenever I say that in Vermont, people really laugh because they kind of don't believe me. But that's what the so-called chain CPI is about. It's a cut in Social Security based on, if you can believe it, the thought that the current COLAs are too generous and we've got to cut back on them. So, Bruce, what we're trying to do is two things. Needless to say, we have fought, and I've helped lead the effort, to oppose any cuts in Social Security, And we have been successful in preventing those cuts. It gets a lot of opposition. Our next job is to increase COLAs by coming up with a new formulation which understands that the purchasing practices of seniors are different than the general public. Seniors spend a lot more money than average people do, than younger people do, on health care, on prescription drugs, on simply being warm in the wintertime. And those costs are going up more than general inflation. So, Bruce, I hear you loud and clear, and it is an issue we are working on.
Howard in Hollywood, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
It's rather good timing because I wanted to suggest that, Tom, you have more time to do this on the air, but the ultimate effect of the two Santa Claus theory is to have a president, a Democratic president, lower the entitlements for people. That's the ultimate goal of this two Santa Claus theory, which in essence means that Ronald Reagan is actually running the Obama administration if this chain CPI is actually becomes law.
Well, Howard, let me say this. Somebody who founded a Senate caucus called the Defending Social Security Caucus, we have worked very, very hard on this issue. And I'm happy to tell you that 2 years ago, you had a lot of discussion, and you turn on television and you hear expressions like entitlement reform. Tom, how many times have we heard the expression, we need entitlement reform?
Constantly.
Translated into English, these are cuts in Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. That's what it means. The people who talk about it don't have the guts to even use the word Social Security. They call it entitlement reform. What I'm happy to tell Howard and other listeners is I think we have beaten back a massive effort to cut Social Security. You're not hearing this among Democrats very much anymore. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I have sent a letter to the president with many, many Senate signatures on it saying, Mr. President, in your budget this year, do not include chain CPI. And I've talked to the president about this, and I hope he will not do that. We need to protect the elderly. We need to help them. Many, many, many elderly people in this country are really struggling, and it is both morally and economically absurd to be cutting back on their very limited benefits. A point I think that was made maybe earlier in the show. This is not just a moral issue, it's an economic issue. You do not have a strong economy. You're not going to grow the jobs that we need unless working people have money to spend. And one of the things that we have seen recently is that companies like JCPenney and Sears are struggling. And you know why they're struggling? Because the middle class and working class of this country has less disposable income, and they can't go into those stores anymore. So we've got to raise the minimum wage. We've got to create jobs. We have to expand Social Security, not cut it. And when you do that, you not only help many millions of people who are hurting economically, but because they have a few bucks in their pocket, they can spend that money, and you create demand-side job growth, and that's something we have got to do.
By the way, I forgot to mention at the opening of the show, welcome to WMRW, our newest affiliate in Warren, Vermont, 95.1 FM.
Warren, Vermont. All right. Well, that is a beautiful town.
Indeed. Steve, in Liberty Hill, Texas, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you both for your work. I'm calling about the Keystone Pipeline, and it's my understanding that the people that think this should be built and be operational say that it's for national security and for energy independence. And I want to know if you think that something in the order of a phased-in export, I don't know.
Ban?
Not ban, but basically phase out exports of fossil fuels, you know, over time to give, you know, companies time to adjust. But that way, it would give us national security. It would give us independence. Oh, and by the way, it might be good for the environment. So I'll just hang up unless you have a question for me. Oh, by the way, also, how is the Price-Anderson bill doing these days?
And okay, Steve raises a couple of interesting issues. Well, let me just say, Steve, at the outset, I am strongly opposed to the Keystone Pipeline. I happen to agree with the vast majority of the scientists who are telling us that global warming and climate change is real. It is wreaking havoc today in the United States in terms of floods, droughts, forest fires, extreme weather disturbances, and all over the world. And if we don't cut carbon emissions, it will only get worse. So I cannot understand how the president or Secretary of State John Kerry, who is going to have a role in this, could support the pipeline. I certainly hope they will not when they talk about the dangers of climate change. That's just, you're moving in two opposite directions. You can't talk about climate change and say, yeah, you know, we will in a sense support this Canadian tar sands production, which is very, very dirty oil. So I am strongly opposed to that. In terms of energy independence and in terms of Price-Anderson, I myself believe, because I take climate change very seriously, that we need to fundamentally transform our energy system away from fossil fuel into a energy efficiency. And we're working very hard. I have an amendment that I hope will get to the floor soon. It would be $1 billion to help states fund energy efficiency. In my state of Vermont, where the weather gets, you know, 20, 25 below zero, we can cut people's fuel bills in half by making sure that their homes and that the buildings and schools are energy efficient. That means well insulated, good windows, good roofing. Literally cut fuel bills in half, cut carbon emissions in half. Plus the fact that we've got to move aggressively in wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, heat pumps, a whole lot of technology out there to enable us to move away from fossil fuels.
Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. We'll be back in just a moment with more of your calls for Senator Sanders.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can check out Bernie's website at Sanders.Senate.gov. Welcome back. And let's see here. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish satellite TV system. You are on the air, Senator Sanders.
Yeah, it's an honor to talk to you again, Senator. I think I figured out why the Republicans are doing nothing in Congress. They get government checks, and that causes people to not work, so the Republicans claim. So the only way to force Republicans to work is to cut off their government paychecks in November. But anyway, the Republicans and the media have putting out a bunch of false claims about Obamacare cutting jobs. And the CBO didn't say that. They actually said that it will allow 2 million people to voluntarily retire, which will create 2 million job openings for other people, and there will be millions of jobs created by, you know, health care, requiring health care people to be hired, and also by cutting the deficit by $1 trillion, which will allow the government to rebuild the infrastructure, putting millions and millions of people to work. Isn't that the case?
I think it is essentially the case. Here's the story. We have the most wasteful, bureaucratic, and irrational healthcare non-system in the entire world. We spend almost twice as much as any other country, and yet our healthcare outcomes are in many cases worse than many other countries. You know, I mentioned earlier, Tom, that I was in Cuba over the weekend, and I happened to have the opportunity to meet with a whole lot of folks in the Cuban healthcare system. And in a country that has many, many problems, they do terrible with housing, they're doing terrible with agriculture, they actually do very well in terms of their healthcare system. They spend a fraction of what we spend per person, and yet their life expectancy and their infant mortality rates are very close to where we are. And the reason for that is they rely a lot on primary healthcare. They produce a whole lot of doctors.
People walk into the doctor's office and without worrying about having to pay a penny, they get the care they need. Prescription drugs are free. And that lays the groundwork for a very cost-effective, good-quality system. You know, Paul talks about the ACA and the Affordable Care Act and the CBO report. What the report says is that in our country today, we have millions of people who are staying on their jobs, not because they want to be on that particular job, but because they have got to be on that job in order to get health care for their families. I remember a story a couple of years ago where some guy joined the United States military. You know why he joined the military? Not because he wanted to be in the military, but because his wife was struggling with breast cancer. This was the only way he knew to get her the treatment that she needed. And you got millions of people who are at work that they don't enjoy, but they have to be there to get health care. And as Paul indicated, what the ACA has done is say, well, guess what? There is now another opportunity, either through the expansion of Medicaid or through the exchanges, that you can get health care. And that opens up job openings for other people. The other thing that it does, which is important, a lot of folks out there are entrepreneurial types. They want to start businesses. Well, you don't have any money today, and you go out and you start a business, it may be very hard for you to get health care. And that's why people are staying at jobs they would rather not stay in. But this will open the opportunity for people to go out, get health care, and start a business, which will be a good thing for the economy.
10 minutes before the hour, it's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls here in our national town hall meeting. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, we always end the hour like this. I've got calls for you from Ohio, New York, Illinois, Colorado, Texas, Kentucky, New York, California, Illinois, and Missouri.
Is that all?
That's all. Okay, let's start with John in Columbus, Ohio. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. Thank you both for everything that you do. And the question that I had regards student loans, because a lot of members of my generation and my comrades and I, of course, come out of college, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. A bachelor's degree is bare minimum. It's if you want to be competitive in this labor market, those of us who seek professional degrees incur additional debt. And I know there was something on the table in Congress a while back, maybe for student loan reform. Is there anything going on with that now? Or?
Yes, it is a huge issue, John, and thanks for raising it. The sad reality is now that student indebtedness, Tom, is at a higher rate, it's over $1 trillion, than credit card debt.
Yeah.
And what John is articulating is the fact not only that students from getting a BA or a BS, but graduate school are coming out very deeply in debt. I last year talked to a couple of dentists in Vermont, young dentists, came out of dental school over $200,000 in debt. So there are a number of ideas out there, but John, this is a very, very important issue. It's important in the sense that if people graduate school tens and tens of thousands of dollars in debt, it will make their career choices really unfair, and they're going to have to go into those areas where they can make quick dollars rather than in those areas that they would like to go in. And we see this in healthcare, for example. Doctors who would like to be primary care physicians can't afford to do that. They have to go into specialties. The country suffers, but they need to make the money they need in order to pay back their student debts. There are a number of ideas out there. One of them it addresses the issue that right now the federal government actually makes tens of billions of dollars off of student loans during the lifetime of those loans. And whether, in my view, the federal government should not be making a profit off of working class people who are struggling to go to college. So that's one area, and if we can deal with that issue, I think we can cut student loans. We attempted a number of months ago to keep student loan interest rates at 3.4%. We didn't have the support to do that, and a bill that I was not comfortable with and voted against ended up being passed. But the Higher Education Act is being reauthorized. This issue will come up, and I think as a nation, we've got to make sure that no person does not go to college because they can't afford to and because they fear these deep debts, and we can't keep young people chained to these debts after they got out of school. So it is a very significant issue. There will be a lot of debate and discussion about it.
Pete, in West Henrietta, New York, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Gentlemen, good afternoon, and thank you both for your work. In an article, Scientific American, the April 15, 2013 issue, there's an article titled, How to Power the World Without Fossil Fuels. Mark Jacobson says he can run the planet solely on wind, water, and solar energy. First stop, New York State. He's completed the plan for New York and is near completing the plan for California. But the beginning of the article says, three times now Mark Jacobson has gone out on a limb. In 2009, he and co-author Mark DeLucci published a cover story in Scientific American that showed how the entire world could get all of its energy, fuel as well as electricity, from wind, water, and solar sources by 2030. Tom, I ask you if you could interview either one or both of these gentlemen. And, Senator, is it possible for you to call a hearing and have these two gentlemen come in and testify?
Pete, thanks very much. I did not thanks for the reference to the Scientific American article, and I will read it. I can't comment on the article, but I agree that there is unbelievable potential if we invest in sustainable energies like wind, solar, geothermal is there. I think biomass can play an important role. I think, as I mentioned earlier, we are wasting huge amounts of money because our buildings and our homes are energy inefficient. I believe that we can, in a very short period of time, move away from fossil fuels. And by the way, when you do that, if we are producing these wind turbines, if we're producing these solar panels in the United States of America, we can create a whole lot of jobs as well. Just one other point. Just this week, there was, I believe, in California, Southern California, a what we call concentrated solar power plant, as opposed to photovoltaics, opened up. I think the project was called the Ivanpah Project. And, Tom, this solar utility project is going to provide electricity for 130,000 households.
Whoa.
You got that?
Yeah.
One large solar project, 130,000 households. That's what the future is about. And, by the way, that technology is only going to become more and more efficient, whether it is solar, whether it's wind, or other technologies. So I feel very strongly that the mission of today, the goal of today, is to transform our energy system, cut greenhouse gas emissions, lead the world in this new technology, help other countries, save the planet, create jobs, lower fuel bills, clean up the air. Man, this is a win-win-win-win situation. And I look forward to reading those articles. And yes, Pete, I am a member of the Energy and Environmental Committee, and this is something I will give thought to.
And I'll check it out, too, to getting these guys on as guests. Bernie, we've got just a minute left in this hour. Your thoughts for the coming week?
Well, the coming week, Congress is not going to be in session, taking off for the president's holiday. There are, as you and I have discussed, Tom, just enormous problems facing our country. And while we have made very good progress in a number of areas with regard to human rights, whether it is civil rights and fighting against racism or discrimination against women or discrimination against gay people, the economic struggle sits in front of us. It is getting worse, not better. And we've got to confront this massive amount of income and wealth inequality, create jobs, raise wages. And that's what we've got to focus on.
No small job. Senator Sanders, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Great talking to you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the show. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard, count on them to help protect what makes you, you. WIX, Wix.com, everyone deserves to have their own stunning site, and it's free. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. ITM Trading, America's trusted source for rare coins and precious metals. Web.com, you say it, they will build it. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Boston Beer, America's leading brewer of handcrafted, full-flavored beers. Geico, 15 minutes could save you up to 15%. And EcoWine.com, your trusted source for organic wines since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday, although we are going to have two guests today. John Gray is going to be with us after the next break, and David Sirota will be with us at the top of the third hour today to talk about how PBS... Say that again? Oh, and Stephanie Miller is going to be with us. There must be two pages to my one sheet here. Ha-ha! There she is! She will be with us at 5:20 Eastern Time, or in the 20 minutes past the third hour, whatever time it may be for you. So, a lot going on. But in the meantime, it's Anything Goes Friday, and so I don't have any... I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that I'd love to talk about, but I don't see any, like, really major rants here other than many of the things Bernie covered. So let's just pick up some phone calls, like we often do on Friday. Rusty in Lorena, Texas. Hey, Rusty. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about this the other day when you were talking about, like, a governor's employer of last resort.
Right.
And I called in then. But anyway, I'm a veteran, and I got out of the Marine Corps back in 1975 in the height of, it was the beginning of the Reagan recession.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty bad back then. I went to a couple of places, man. 80 guys applying for, three or four jobs. But anyway, Jimmy Carter had a program called CETA, Comprehensive Employment and Training Act.
Yes, I used to, I ran a nonprofit at the time, a community for abused kids, and we hired people through CETA. It was a wonderful program.
Yes, it was. And what they did in my geographic area, I came back home to Texas from California, from 29 Palms Marine Corps base, and what they did how they implemented it in our area that helped me was that they would hire us for this program, and then they would train us like 2 days a week. We would get to go to class and learn to be either a machinist or a welder, and they had instructors there, and they taught us blueprint reading and how to do our specific job, welder or machinist. And then the other 3 days a week we would go out and cut brush out of ditches and stuff with I don't know if you know what a yo-yo is, but it's the same thing that Paul Newman and all the guys used in Cool Hand Luke.
Okay.
So, but we got a paycheck.
Yeah.
We got job training. And
yeah.
It's been directly responsible for my success as a husband, father, successful taxpayer today.
Yeah. Well, and for us, I mean, CETA also said that if you were a legitimate nonprofit organization, they would pay all or most of the payroll for a person's, I think it was like their first 6 months of employment, if you would commit to keep them for a year. This is my recollection of it. It was some variation on that. And I remember the guy we hired, his name was John, and we hired him as basically janitor is not quite a sophisticated enough word. It was maintenance of the entire physical plant. I mean, we had four houses and lots of stuff, and John was learning electric wiring, he was learning plumbing, he was learning, how to repair roofs. I mean, he did all that stuff, and he had none of those skills when he came in, and we would have local people come in and teach him those things, and then he would do them, and because CETA was paying for his salary, and we would pay for some of the training, and then, we had a trained employee, and John stayed with us for years. He stayed with us for 3 or 4 years after that, and he was a very valuable employee. And then when he moved on because somebody else offered him a lot more money and we could afford to pay him. So
why can't we do something like that again, man?
Well, because that was a Democratic program. I mean, Jimmy Carter proposed that. It was passed by a Democratic Congress, and you just couldn't get that through the House of Representatives today. The Republicans do not believe in government paying for anything, much less training people.
Where's Where's Jimmy Carter when we need him?
Yeah, well, he's still around and he's still speaking out. It's just that he's not president anymore. So, but Rusty, you're right. The CETA program was, in my opinion, and just firsthand personal experience, one of the most successful, you know, post New Deal programs that and post Great Society programs that we had. And of course, when Reagan took power 4 years after, you know, after 4 years of Jimmy Carter, after the Iran-Contra thing, he killed it. He killed CETA. He killed pretty much everything else. And now we're living in the Reagan Revolution rather than the Great Society and the New Deal. So, Rusty, thank you for the call. Thanks for a nice walk down memory lane. Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind today? You wanted to talk about Obama and Fast Track?
Yes, sir. How are you, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better, Wayne. I hope the same is true for you.
Oh, okay, I'm fine. Yes, I just wanted to, I want to ask Senator Sanders what his analysis is, but yours is just as good. What do you, in your analysis, what do you think is the reason why the president is even seeking to circumvent the Congress to get this fast-track TPP thing going on? And the thing about it is, the oligarchs and the plutocrats already almost completely dominate the United States economy and the world economy. So this will be like the straw that broke the camel's back for good if this TPP thing passes. So what is his is the president's analysis of why it's a good thing when everybody knows it's a bad thing? What is your analysis as to why is he still trying to do this?
All right. I can't speak for Bernie, but I can certainly speak for myself. I think that the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, SHAFTA, which they're calling the TPP, is the reason why the president is supporting it, and a number of Democrats, or some Democrats, have supported it historically, although they all seem to be backing away very quickly now, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see the president backing away from it. But I think the reason that the people who were supporting it initially were doing so because of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, in, you know, 38 years ago, found that the First Amendment protects money in politics. And 36 years ago found that the 14th Amendment protects corporations in political activity. And so we have big money and big corporations throwing their hat into the ring and basically running our political system. And the president of the United States is not immune to that pressure. And, you know, I've made the metaphor before, Wayne, that we don't elect leaders in this country. We elect representatives. That's what the Constitution says. And that if there's a big enough parade going down the street, a politician, whether it's the president or it's the local county commissioner, will jump out in front of it with a flag and say, this is my parade. So our job is to get the parade going. But the fact of the matter is that because of these Supreme Court decisions, the Buckley case, the First National Bank versus Bilotti case, and the Citizens United case in our recent history, just in the last 40 years, and although we can take it all the way back, you know, we can take it back to the mid-19th century, but these three cases were the pivotal ones. That because of this, the biggest parade happening right now is the parade that includes people like the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and Paul Singer and all these other, you know, Pete Peterson and Art Pope and all these other multimillionaires and billionaires who are throwing all kinds of money into the political process, invest $10 million, make $10 billion kind of thing. And like I said, the president is not immune to that pressure. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is that there are some good members of Congress, mostly in the Senate, because in the Senate you get elected for 6 years, and Bernie just got reelected, and Sherrod Brown just got reelected, and so you've got, and they're the most outspoken about TPP, and so you've, and because they don't have to worry about the hammer coming down for another 5 years, and so you've got some members of Congress who are speaking out very loudly, along with a lot of us in the media and in the press. Although the corporate media has been largely silenced by this because they are owned by transnational corporations. But, there's been enough pressure that they called that fast track authority, Wayne, the bipartisan trade promotion authority. And in the House of Representatives, they couldn't find a single Democrat to co-sponsor it. So it wasn't really bipartisan. Am I making sense, Wayne?
Right. Not one single Democrat.
Not one. I mean, it was like wishful thinking on their part. They thought they could brand it that way. And the one Democrat that they got in the Senate was Max Baucus, who's leaving the Senate to go off to be the ambassador to China, which is in the Asia and the Southern Hemisphere. So, you know, Max Baucus is going off to be the diplomat representing the Southern Hemisphere Asia part of the Southern Hemisphere Asia Free Trade Agreement, or SHAFTA. And that was it. So, Wayne, thanks for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That said, you've got to contact your member of the House of Representatives. This is where the battle's going to be, telling them no to fast track. Welcome back. Anything Goes Friday. Lynn in Forest Knowles, California, watching Free Speech TV on your local cable system. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Hi. Good to talk to you. I wish we could clone a million of you and Amy Goodman and Senator Sanders, among others.
Well, you know, the more of us who get involved in politics and the more people who get active, the more people like Bernie will get elected.
Yeah. My point when he was on was just to say I'm not a wealthy senior citizen. I'm 85. I'm living on $866 a month Social Security, which I'm not living on. I'm broke by the last week of the month. And I got a big cost of living raise of $13, two of which went instantly to SSI. They took out, they took $2 from their account. And then the other 11 went to a raise in my mortgage. So I got nothing called cost of living.
Right.
So that's certainly a huge issue for me. I'm struggling to figure out how to get my budget to match my Social Security, which is impossible, I think.
Right.
But the other thing I wanted to talk about, he also talked about solar energy. You've been talking about it. I can't get behind climate change until I look up now today. My sky is completely gray, and it's all from aerial stratospheric spraying.
Yeah.
So how I can't even talk climate change until somebody cops to the fact that we are having our climate changed out here in California every day, and that our weather has completely
changed. You're talking
changed.
About the ice crystals that form when jets fly through the stratosphere.
No, I'm talking about aerosol spraying by somebody, our big government, and, you know, tied into the HAARP stuff up in Alaska.
Yeah.
They're talking about their...
Lynn, you're reading the wrong websites.
They need to know that they can control climate in order to control the world.
Yeah. They don't need to control climate to control the world. All they need to control is the banks. And you're reading the wrong websites, Lynn. I'm serious. It diminishes... it diminishes your credibility.
Wait a minute, Tom.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
I'm not blind. I'm sitting here with a lot of other people. We watch the clouds.
When you burn kerosene at 30,000 feet, carbohydrates, kerosene, which, you know, contains carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, the exhaust contains large quantities of water vapor. Water vapor at 30,000 feet. At 30,000 feet, the temperature is 50 degrees below zero. So when that water vapor comes out of the back of a jet engine, it instantly turns to ice crystals in the stratosphere, and it becomes man-made cirrus clouds. This is not some giant weather model. It will have some small effect on the weather. You get enough airplanes up there. In fact, we saw this on 9/11 when there was 3 days where there was no jets in the sky, and the skies were crystal clear blue. And it actually cooled the planet down a little bit, apparently, because the reflected heat wasn't bouncing back down. On the other hand, it may be that it's reflecting some heat out. So there's a debate about the albedo effect from jet trails.
Let me just say something.
Yes.
Do you ever see commercial lines crossing each other, up and down, crosses, all kinds of different directions? You never see a commercial jet doing that. I'm talking about serious... well above the jet line, higher than all of that, that is spraying continuously over our country.
Spraying what, then?
California. And it's dangerous.
Spraying what?
It's aluminum and barium and have you done any research at all?
I actually have, Lynn, and I'm telling you, it's not what you think. Thank you for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Dr. John Gray on the line with us, relationship expert, author of the book Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. His website, marsvenus.com and crucial.com, just did a fascinating new survey about what men find attractive in women. John Gray, welcome back to the program, by the way.
I'm happy to be on the program on Valentine's Day, hoping everybody has a great Valentine's Day.
Indeed. And thank you for that reminder, because I should have said Happy Valentine's Day to Senator Sanders, to my listeners, and this is the first mention of it today. So on Valentine's Day, what is it that particularly single men need to know?
Well, a review of what we're about to say, my five tips for Valentine's Day. The most important, it's a little late now, but the most important is plan ahead. And to whatever extent you can convey that you've planned something tonight before tonight comes and you say, what do you want to do tonight?
Right.
Anybody listening now can start planning. Women really appreciate special occasions. Women appreciate some planning ahead. Women appreciate little tokens of love. Doesn't have to be expensive. It can be a flower. Doesn't have to be a dozen roses. A flower. A
gardenia. Is it not true that men appreciate those things too?
Generally speaking, men don't care that much about Valentine's Day getting presents.
Yeah, I don't care that much about Valentine's Day, but if right. Louise goes out of her way, my wife, to do something, even something very small for me, I appreciate
like,
it.
Like what?
It could be, well, usually it would be saying something or saying, hey, let's go out tonight. I mean, there have been times when...
Yeah, no, that would be perfectly wonderful. Men need love, too. It's often...
Yeah.
My expertise is there's a shift of focus, and typically what women say to men, if a woman is like, wow, what a great idea, oh, wow, hadn't thought of that, or let's do this fun thing together, men really love that.
Yeah.
But the fact that a woman plans ahead something to surprise you is nice, but it's not like men come to counseling saying he never does anything for me. There's a subtlety here, which is...
Yeah.
There's a hormone in women's bodies called oxytocin. Men have it, but we don't run out of it. Women run out of it very quickly, and it regulates stress levels in women. And it's oxytocin. And to understand this is like amazing, because if you give a woman a little hug, you get a big dose of oxytocin. If you give her 24 roses, she gets a surge of oxytocin. But you can give her one rose, and it's a surge of oxytocin.
Right. This is the hormone that that a woman's body produces at the time of childbirth that causes the bonding instinct.
That's clear. It also causes it also is shown to regulate her stress, meaning that when oxytocin levels are a healthy level, she's happy, she feels loving,
right.
And when they go down, she feels more stressed.
Doesn't oxytocin also go up in both men and women as a consequence of orgasm?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the release. You have to have a certain amount of oxytocin in order to climax, and men typically have no problem climaxing. There is a small percent of men that do have that issue, and they don't have enough oxytocin. But most men do have plenty of it.
Yeah.
But women can easily run out of it. Stress depletes women of it. And, you know, that's what the crucial, .com study, it's a playful study, but it's interesting. What they found is that a high percent of women preferred men who were tech savvy. And this is kind of a shift, as opposed to guys who are athletes and go out to the gym if they had a choice. They like the guy who's tech savvy. And people say, well, why? It's because the number one stress for women today is they feel like there's not enough time. And if a computer's running slow, then they're just more frustrated. And, because Crucial asked me to do this, they provide memories for computers. So I actually put a new memory in my computer. My wife watched it. I'm like the hero of the universe now because it's so much faster. It was so inexpensive and so easy to do.
So we've gone from going out of the cave and clubbing the dinner to working out in the gym and demonstrating physical prowess that would be associated with the ability to bring dinner, to now having and the intellectual capacity to make dinner.
In a sense, give her the time she needs. I mean, it's amazing.
How do you respond to somebody who says that's a pretty sexist group of stereotypes?
Well, I'm dealing with that since I wrote Men Are From Mars since 1992. And I say,
right.
You can be intellectual about that. But the reality is these are very common experiences that people have. 80% of the time, they tend to ring true. 10% are not heterosexual, generally speaking. And 10% of women tend to have much higher testosterone levels, and they relate a lot to the male experience. And there's 10% of men that tend to have low testosterone levels, and they tend to relate more to estrogen-dominant activities.
So you're saying biology is destiny at a certain level here?
At a certain level, yeah. I mean, you can adjust biology. For example, if a man is out of work and starts feeling depressed because, you know, I'm not making a living, how am I going to get by? His testosterone levels will dramatically drop. His estrogen level, the female hormone, will dramatically increase. But the problem is he will be moody, he will be irritable, he'll be easily angered, or he'll be passive. So when men start having dominant female hormones, they are actually much more stressed.
So I've seen the studies that indicate that men in workplace positions where they feel that they are being crushed, whether it's by a man or a woman, you know, where there's significant power dynamics where they're the underdog,
you're
so to
say,
their testosterone levels drop.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, when men, for example, the one study I saw was done around elections. When men win elections, their testosterone levels spike.
Yeah. It's testosterone is linked to feeling successful, that you make a difference. And testosterone in men is the number one regulator of stress.
Hmm.
So the idea, the win-win on Valentine's Day, is for a man to know a few simple things that you do, for example, and then a woman delights in that, so he ends up feeling successful that he accomplished something for her. She appreciates it, delights in it, and she ends up bonding more with him because he's done something for her. So if I do something for you, my testosterone goes up. If you do something for me, my oxytocin goes up. So oxytocin is more like what you receive, and testosterone is more like what you're successful at.
Fascinating. Dr. John Gray, relationship expert, author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, his website, marsvenus.com, and the survey link is posted over tomhartmann.com, and crucial.com did the study that Dr. Gray is speaking of. Dr. Gray, thanks so much for being with us again.
Tom, thank you so much. I listen to your show all the time.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Hang on just a second.
Call 866-987-THOM.
Sorry about that guy who steps on us all the time. Thank you for your kind words, John Gray. And happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you, and happy Valentine's Day. I should have thought of that earlier. In fact, it's right there on my one sheet. Sean put it down, but I... What am I going to do tonight now? Uh-oh. No. Actually, we have plans. What I discovered last week or a week and a half ago when I started looking at restaurant reservations was, like, there ain't none. But we had a plan. Anyway, David in Chicago. Hey, David, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I guess just kind of a humorous remark, but instead of buying your gal some flowers, just get her a bottle of oxytocin. Is that the takeaway from your last guest?
Well, actually, you can produce it in her body by simply giving her a good hug or a kiss, you know, or doing something nice for her. But, this is the bonding hormone. There actually is...
Yeah.
In the kind of underground, you know, where the pheromone business, you know, where they would make these colognes with pheromones and things.
Yeah.
There are people who claim that they are selling oxytocin and that, you know, men put it on and it causes women to want to bond with them. And I think that that's hyper simplistic, but and probably very dangerous. But the fact of the matter is that oxytocin levels do go up in women when they are very happy. And testosterone levels go up in men.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
reason I called is I wanted to talk about something that you and Senator Sanders were discussing in the earlier hour, and that was regarding this Chattanooga Volkswagen assembly plant in Tennessee.
Right, where Republican Senator Bob Corker came out and just before the election said, if you guys vote against the union, Volkswagen's going to open a new plant or expand their assembly line.
Now, you have ties to Germany, so I think you could research this and verify this. But as I understand it, wasn't it the case that after World War II, part of the reforms is that we told the German corporations that they had to have union representatives on their boards of directors. At the same time, our country was passing Taft-Hartley and not passing the health care reform, universal health care that Truman wanted.
To a certain extent, that's true. Harry Truman in 1947 proposed national single-payer health care system. It got shot down by the Republicans in Congress, and instead they passed Taft-Hartley, which is the right to work for less law, allowing any state to opt out of the National Labor Relations Act. Harry Truman had some influence on the new German government that was writing a new constitution. The exact nature and content and quality of that influence, to the best of my knowledge, has never been accurately chronicled and is the subject of enormous speculation. But the fact of the matter is that the German constitution says that any corporation in operating in Germany, that is incorporated in Germany and operates in Germany, that employs more than 1,000 people, has to have 50% of its members of the board of its board of directors come directly from the ranks of organized labor within that corporation. And the rate of union participation in Germany, I don't know the statistics for 2012, 2013, but a few years back we did a whole show on this. We had one of the German labor guys on, and at that point he was saying it was in the high 80s or the mid 80s, and the people who were not unionized were the people who were working part-time or who were in fields where it's just, you know, they just don't have unions. You know, politicians, for example, are not members of a union.
So I'm glad you explained that, because I'm sick and tired of these. There's some issues I agree with Republicans on. They wrap themselves in the flag and World War II patriotism, all that. We have to remind them that we were telling the Germans to do one thing, we're screwing ourselves in our own country during the same time frame. And I think
that's right. And here's the interesting thing about that Volkswagen factory and the union vote there is that. That was and I think this is the reason why Republican Senator Corker jumped in and tried to influence the outcome of the vote, perhaps illegally, certainly immorally, is that that election to have or not to have a union was probably one of the first major unionization elections in the United States since, you know, mid-Reagan years. I mean, literally in the last 20 years. Where the employer was not aggressively, bringing in the union busting companies. This is a $2 billion a year business. These companies that come in and they show movies and they do one-on-one counseling with employees to try and demonstrate how horrible the union will be for the employees and for the company and for the world and for the economy and everything else. Volkswagen didn't do that. Volkswagen is heavily unionized. Volkswagen is entirely unionized in Germany. And so they did not, as a company, object to the workers asking for a vote on whether there'd be a union. They were completely neutral on this. And Bob Corker tried to make it seem like they were not being neutral. But the fact of the matter is, as a German company, Volkswagen gets it. So
Senator Corker should be reminded that he doesn't want to be a rich man in a poor country.
Yes, that famous saying from that guy in that Bloomberg report. Yep, amen. David, thank you for the call, and thanks for pointing that out and giving us all a chance to rant about it. Detroit Johnny O in Romulus, Michigan. Hey, Johnny O, how you doing?
Ben John, amigo.
Good to have you call. So you wanted to talk about dental care?
You know, that's just a fantastic idea that should have. This should be something that should be in the veterans' medical benefits, you know.
Well, Bernie's working to get it in there.
Yeah. What do all the veterans across this country need to do to make this happen? And you should be able to get your teeth cleaned every 6 months. That's the
right.
VA perfect.
What the veterans need to do is they need to call their member of the House of Representatives and both their senators and say, get on the stick with Senator Sanders here and include dental care in veterans' benefits. It's real simple. And while they're at it, you might want to say, oh, and by the way, include dental care in Obamacare.
There you go. Absolutely. What an idea.
Yeah.
That's why you or Mike Papatone should be the Speaker of the House, for God's sake.
Yeah, except I don't think either one of us would survive as a politician. But we do a pretty good talk show, so, you know, that's a start. Johnny O, thanks a lot for the call. It's always great to hear from you. Jimmy in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hello, how you doing, Tom?
Great.
I just wanted to talk about the Medicaid expansion here in Arkansas. Last year they worked together, the Democrats and Republicans in the state,
right,
to to make the Medicaid expansion. They had kind of an alternative.
Right.
And it's but after 6 months, which it expires June 30th, some of them are thinking about reversing it.
Right.
And that's crazy. And there's something I think you did not understand about Arkansas Medicaid, Tom, that before this expansion, that you could have no money and less than $1 income per month and still not be eligible for Medicaid. That is barbaric and sadistic. Don't you agree?
I do. I do. It's criminal. And I understand, help me with this. I've seen a couple of news reports that say that in Arkansas, it's going to take a 75% majority of one or both of your branches of state legislature to reauthorize the Medicaid expansion. And even though the way that Arkansas, you know, the president gave them a waiver, and so you're running it through the for-profit health insurance companies, so they get to skim their 20% off the top. So fewer people are covered, but you know, and there's profit to be made, but still people are insured. But because there have been a number of people who have resigned from your state legislature and others who are probably going to get booted out as Tea Partiers replace them, that 75% threshold may not exist come June. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Is this in your constitution? Was this the result of a voter referendum? When did 75% become the threshold for a vote? It's two-thirds is the supermajority in most states and in the federal constitution, and 50% plus one is typically, you know, majority rules. How did that happen? Do you know?
Yes, it's just crazy state politics. I don't know. I'd have to look into that.
Uh-huh.
But if they do reverse this, Tom, I will not give it up. I mean, I want people to be covered, and I'm going to not only, you know, talk to talk shows like you, but I will send emails to these congressmen, these state congressmen and senators. I will harass them till the end.
Yeah.
With calls,
well, you know what,
to their office.
You know what Bernie suggested on this program? It's been about a year since he pitched this out there, but he used to suggest it fairly often. He does town halls all over Vermont all the time. I mean, there's not a single – I don't think there's a person in Vermont who hasn't shaken his hand at least once, because Bernie's just like all the time out there. But what he said you should do is rent a hall, and there's a bunch of them you can get for free, you know, a library, a town hall, the local school gym. Get a hall for a particular date, you know, a month or two out in the future. And then invite your state legislator, your state senator, your member of Congress, whoever it is that you're trying to focus on, invite them to come, and then issue a news release to the paper that you're going to hold a meeting on this issue on this day at this place, and you're hoping that Representative so-and-so will show up. And it shames them into showing up and doing a town hall when they'd rather not touch the topic. So, you know, that's a kind of a guerrilla warfare way to do it, Jimmy, that Bernie says he knows has worked on some of his colleagues. He's always out in front of the curve, setting these things up himself. So you might want to consider that, too. Jimmy, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. It's 15 minutes before the hour. We'll be back with more of Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Don't forget, David Sirota is going to be with us at the top of the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
David is going to be talking about the rot at PBS. What? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, insulin and oxytocin are similar?
They are, as a matter of fact. They are two... I don't know, protein hormones, which means they're made of amino acids.
Right.
Whereas most hormones are steroid hormones. They're made of rings of carbon atoms. But
steroids.
Yeah. And most hormones are based on cholesterol. Steroid hormones are made from cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
But oxytocin, I learned this when I was a biochemistry student at Michigan State, that insulin and oxytocin, they're very short molecules. They're only about 8 or 9 amino acids in length. They have very different functions.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they only are different by one or two amino acids.
Whoa.
Which,
a little extra adenine, a little extra thymine, a little extra guanine or cytosine, and you move one to the other?
Yeah, it's just it really is just that different. It's just one amino acid different.
Are they both produced by the pancreas?
No, I don't think oxytocin is produced by the pancreas. No,
yeah.
But the question comes up if oxytocin makes the ladies feel good. How do we, you know, when you eat chocolate, what do you secrete? Insulin. So who's to know which is to make you feel good, the chocolate or the insulin?
Well, you know, but as you point out, insulin and oxytocin have very, very different responses in the body.
Yes, they do. That's just
On the third hand, there are people who claim that they're overweight because they eat when they're stressed and eating gives them pleasure, and that sounds like an oxytocin thing, not an insulin thing.
It very well could be. It was just a kind of a brain exercise here.
Yes.
So I have another one for you, Tom,
okay.
On Anything Goes Friday.
Okay.
This is on global climate change.
Mm-hmm.
We often hear from the conservatives, and especially the religious conservatives, that God's planet is so enormous, and we can't have any effect on God's planet.
Okay.
And I'm reminiscent of Melville's book Moby Dick. And in Moby Dick, there are actually two epilogues. In the second epilogue, epilogue B, he talks about whether or not whaling is a good and right thing to do. I mean, should we really be doing this? Now, Moby Dick was written in 1842, published in 1842.
Right.
And he says, and this is not an exact quote, but it was something like this. God's creature's too great, his ocean's too vast, nothing we could do would ever affect them in a way that they would eventually become extinct.
Wow.
By the end of Melville's life in 1892, almost all of the sperm whales and right whales in the world were gone.
Right.
In 50 years at the time
wow.
of his death.
Now, were those two epilogues to Moby Dick written as nonfiction commentaries?
The first one, as you know, if you read Moby Dick, it's really not what we.
But Moby Dick is written in the first person. So were they continuations of the narrative, or were they, as I recall, or were they, just, you know, author's notes kind of thing?
They were more author's notes about whaling, because Moby Dick was mostly, it wasn't a book about good and evil and all that the stuff. It wasn't Ahab's, you know, insane quest for the white whale. A lot of it was about the minutia of whaling, and indeed. That's what comes to Ahab's demise, was how the rigging can strangle you when it comes off the chase boat, or if you're not careful.
Right.
Ahab. But, they're just more comments about whaling. And then the second epilogue is about, it's just commentary on, is this a good thing to do?
Fascinating. Paul, you always educate me. I really love hearing from you. Thank you so much for the call. We'll be back. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Harbin here with you. Let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can give the gift of a goat to a returning slave in South Sudan. Hello, Victoria.
Hi, Tom.
So what's nice to see you. What's going on? And happy Valentine's Day, by the way.
And to you, too.
Thank you. So what's going on in the world?
Well, President Obama is in California. He's in Fresno, California, as you may already have. No, I think he's still there. To discuss the drought plaguing most of California and the western U.S. He's also going to be offering federal aid and announcing other administrative actions, including a proposed $1 billion climate fund. It's a climate resilience fund that he's going to propose in his budget next month. And according to the White House, this fund will go to research on the projected impacts of climate change, help communities prepare for climate change's effects, and fund what they call breakthrough technologies and resilient infrastructure.
And this is coming out of the White House.
Yes, this is the White House idea.
That's very interesting. Does it require an act of Congress, or is this part of the... Okay.
It requires funding from Congress, yes.
Right. So, in all probability, we'll see crickets coming out of the Republican-controlled House of Representatives.
Yes, likely.
That's unfortunate. Because this sounds like a good, you know, resilient communities. I mean, that's the new buzzword.
That's right. But federal aid is being directed to Fresno. I mean, as you know, this drought is pretty devastating.
Right.
Is going to impact very likely, or at least likely, as my understanding, the cost of fruits and vegetables across the country if it continues very much longer, and of livestock and of everything.
Really? So our food supply is at risk because of our weird weather?
well, our food supply is at risk because of this drought.
Yeah. Remarkable. Okay, so what else is going on?
Also today, the Obama administration, the Treasury, released new guidelines aimed at making it easier for banks to serve marijuana businesses in states where selling the drugs legal. So the banks have been really leery to open accounts for pot shops.
Right, because
they're illegal under federal law.
Right, and banks are federally regulated, and they don't want to get busted for money laundering or whatever the crime is. So the Obama administration has offered specific guidelines to give the banks an opportunity to do this.
Exactly.
That's great.
To the banks that as long as the marijuana businesses are following state law and they've got the proper paperwork, they won't be targeted by the federal government. The police have been getting really worried about, without a bank account, marijuana businesses are operating as a cash businesses, and there have been all these tales of pot shop owners driving around with thousands of dollars in cash.
Right, that's just it's waiting for a mugging.
Absolutely.
Or worse.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. President Obama today was speaking at the retreat of House Democrats on the eastern shore of Maryland. And he weighed into a high-stakes union vote at Volkswagen AG's plant in Tennessee in Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm. This is the one that Bob Corker yesterday tried to blow up, the Volkswagen union vote, where the Republican senator said, well, you know, if you guys vote against the union, the company may expand operations, which apparently was not in Volkswagen's mind at all. This is a heavily unionized company that did not object to the union vote. Do I have that right?
Well, it depends who you talk to. That is exactly what Bob Corker said. And then Frank Fisher, who is the chief executive of Volkswagen Chattanooga, said, well, that's not the case. But Bob Corker has then come back and said, well, Frank Fisher is talking from old talking points and doesn't know what's going on. And by the way, pretty much most of these negotiations for Volkswagen Chattanooga have been done around my dining room table. I do know what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's so weird. So the guy who's the CEO of the company doesn't know what's going on in the company, but the Republican senator from the state does know what's going on in the company and what it has to do with the union. That's bizarre.
Well, he's saying that the guy who is the chief executive of Chattanooga Volkswagen doesn't know the big plan.
Oh, so he doesn't know what's going on with his boss, basically.
Right, is what he's saying, and he's saying, I do. But Volkswagen is known to be okay with these companies.
Well, Volkswagen is a German company. They're entirely unionized in Germany.
Exactly.
My understanding is this is one of the first major union votes, you know, votes to have or not have a union in a major manufacturing facility in the United States in 20 years that has not been contested by the company.
Right, exactly. And the vote's going on as we speak.
Incredible.
Turnout was heavy on Wednesday. The voting's been going on over a few days. The turnout was heavy Wednesday. It's lighter today because the plant is closed. But it closes to voting finishes tonight, and they're expecting the results fairly soon after that.
Right.
So the president weighed in, and he accused Republican politicians who oppose unionization of being more concerned about German shareholders than U.S. workers.
Well, that's a good point, too. Shareholders, period. I mean, you know, it's just that's always Republicans are always more concerned about shareholders than workers. I mean, it's surprise. Pardon me. Okay.
The Senate Democrats are introducing a bill that would require cell phones to come with a kill switch to make them less appealing to thieves. This is something that's being talked about in certain states, particularly California. San Francisco, where cell phone theft is just rampant. But a mandating the feature on all new cell phones would erase people's personal, financial, and data and make the phones useless if they're stolen, the four Democrats backing the measure.
And this is something that could have been there all along. And I understand here in D.C. at one of the shopping malls out there, there's a machine where you drop a cell phone in and it gives you $200 in cash.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, if you drop a smartphone in, it gives you a couple $100 in cash, and that's one of the things that has been fueling these drive-by phone snatches in the metro.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think it's one of the malls out, you know, in the Virginia side, just across the river. There was an article about it in the Washington Post about a couple of months ago.
I missed that. I've been following this quite closely because I'm very.
Well, you know, come back and correct me if I'm wrong. You know, check it out over the weekend. But I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. I mean, maybe they put an end to it. There was
a drumbeat for me now. People are getting sick and tired of it.
Yeah. The kill switches are, you know, I mean, this is duh. You know, it's like hardened doors on airplane cockpits. Victoria Jones at the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, goodsfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Victoria. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Tom. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the show. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard, count on them to help protect what makes you, you. WIX, Wix.com, everyone deserves to have their own stunning site, and it's free. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. ITM Trading, America's trusted source for rare coins and precious metals. Web.com, you say it, they will build it. Granger, for the ones who get it done. Boston Beer, America's leading brewer of handcrafted, full-flavored beers. Geico, 15 minutes could save you up to 15%. And EcoWine.com, your trusted source for organic wines since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. And why won't PBS release details of a $3.5 million deal with a billionaire? David Sirota is writing these days for Pando Daily, a nationally syndicated columnist, the author of three books, most recently Back to Our Future, his website, davidsirota.com. And, David, it's always great talking with you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
So, whoops, I didn't push the button. I guess I did. There we go. So, what's the deal with PBS? I mean, you know, I think most people think of PBS as like some very high integrity news source, although I've been noticing increasingly, last night Mara Liasson was on Fox News, and when Krauthammer was going, you know, Obamacare sucks, she was grinning from ear to ear, and it wasn't, you know, he didn't literally say that, but close to it, and increasingly I'm hearing people from the Heritage Foundation and from the Competitive Enterprise Institute and all these, you know, hard right think tanks, Koch brothers funded think tanks, showing up on PBS, but Is this part of that, or is this something else?
Well, I think that there's a question of ideology on PBS and throughout the media, and then there's a question of funding and what may be called payola. PBS is ostensibly, at least its brand is, a public journalism, publicly funded journalism. And so part of PBS's budget comes from taxpayers through the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. Part of it comes from members making donations, and part of it comes from corporate interests. Right. The last part is the part that's downplayed by PBS and its own branding. But PBS is forced, because taxpayers don't fund it at a level that any other industrialized country funds its public media, our PBS is forced increasingly to go out and try to get money from corporate underwriters for its programming. What happened this week, though, represents something that crosses all sorts of lines, including PBS's own rules and potentially FCC regulations. PBS cut a secret deal with a guy named John Arnold, a former Enron trader who's now a billionaire, who has been financing a multi-million-dollar campaign in state legislatures to slash the retirement benefits for public employees. That's his big call.
Why would he do that?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons. He's a conservative ideologue. Part of it is that with states facing budget pressures,
states are trying to balance their budgets on the backs of pension cuts rather than considering, let's say, tax increases on billionaires or ending corporate subsidies.
Right.
So John Arnold is funding this campaign. He is public about funding this campaign. What he hasn't been so public about, and certainly what PBS hasn't been public about, is that John Arnold is simultaneously and secretly funding a $3.5 million PBS news program, embedded in its news program, mind you, on the news hour, called The Pension Peril, which is promoting segments that are all about how we have to cut public employee pensions because they're supposedly bankrupting our states. And CBS is not making an explicit disclosure that he is funding this segment. PBS has previously, in its rules, not allowed this kind of funding. You can make grants for general journalism, but you are not allowed, if you are a political activist on a particular issue, you're not allowed to also simultaneously fund the PBS programming specifically on that issue. It makes sense as to why. I mean, at one point, one of these segments, I'll give you an example, promoted the California ballot initiative to cut public employee pensions, and they promoted that as part of this series that John Arnold was funding, without not only mentioning that he's funding it, but without even mentioning that John Arnold is also funding the ballot initiative that they were covering. So all sorts of conflicts.
Right. And, wow, that's pretty amazing. Is this just basically PBS selling out because they need the cash?
I think it's a good question. I mean, I certainly think that they need the resources. That's absolutely true. They tailored, according to their spokespeople, they tailored this news program originally because they knew of John Arnold's interest in and his activism on public pensions.
Wait a minute. So they knew that this guy wants to smash public pensions. Because, gee, if we're going to fulfill public pensions, we might have to raise taxes on billionaires or whatever. They knew that this guy didn't like public pensions, and so they came up with an idea for a news story that would trash public pensions and pitched him to it. What's next? They're going to pitch privatized Social Security to Pete Peterson?
That's exactly right. I mean, that was one of the revelations in our story that was most shocking. Arnold didn't come to them and say, look, I want to fund this. I mean, that would be... You'd understand his motivations, and you could criticize PBS for accepting the funding. What's worse is that PBS, knowing its own rules against conflicts of interest, said to us that they knew his interest in and activism on pensions and originally went to him with this proposal. And I want to be clear, part of the problem with this proposal, and I don't want to say it's any individual PBS journalist who's working on this, part of the problem is the entire framing of this. The show is called, and the segment that you'll see on the news hour, again, undisclosed that Arnold's funding it, is Pension Peril. Notice that it's not, the segment is not called, let's say, Stadium Subsidy Peril, or Corporate Subsidy Peril, or Low Taxes Are Not Generating Enough Public Revenue Peril. It's Pension Peril. Right. Even though states are spending far more on corporate subsidies than the entire pension shortfalls in pension funds are valued at, the ideological skewing of this is to say that pensions are the singular problem with state budgets, and the way to fix state budgets is to cut those pensions.
Well, and here's one other piece to this, David, and that is that a lot of the state pensions, or at least a number of them that I've seen some good reporting done on this, are in trouble in part because they were invested in the stock market, and these Wall Street guys, like this former Enron trader, presumably, I mean, the Wall Street billionaires crashed the stock market in 2008 and then took down a lot of pension funds with it.
That's absolutely right. I mean, the Enron connection with John Arnold, former Enron trader, Enron blew a huge hole in public pensions. And you're right, the 2008 stock collapse hurt pension funds as well. You're absolutely right. And so what's amazing is states have not been funding their pension. They've not been meeting what they need to put into pensions for years. They've been raiding that money, spending it on things like tax cuts and corporate subsidies. Then Wall Street comes in and blows a hole in the pension fund returns. And then guess what? The solution, according to the John Arnolds of the world, is to simply cut retirement benefits that were promised to retirees.
Right, and let Wall Street keep the profits.
Absolutely. And just one other point about the Wall Street connection. one of the worst stories that's happening on this, I encourage everybody to look at, is Rhode Island. Not only have they cut the pension benefits to employees, but the woman who became general treasurer there, who's now running for governor, moved more and more of the money into high-fee hedge funds. To the hedge fund industry, which of course backed her campaign.
Right.
One of the other things that's happening on public pension funding is that politicians are trying to move more of the funds that exist in pension funds into extremely high fee investments that often don't beat the stock market. But guess what? Those fees finance the profits of hedge funds.
Who then donate money to PBS.
Exactly.
David,
exactly right.
20 seconds left. Has PBS responded to your piece?
PBS is refusing to release the terms of the contract with John Arnold, although John Arnold says he reserves the right to cut off funding in, quote, extraordinary circumstances, which would seem to suggest he has serious editorial influence. He cut off the funding if he simply doesn't like what PBS is reporting.
Wow. Wow. That's grim. And PBS controls the both. Isn't this the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB?
That's right.
Yeah, okay, so CPB, and they control the TV arm. Do they control the radio arm as well, or fund the radio arm as well?
They fund some of NPR, but this is only on the TV, at least.
So this is mostly the TV side of it. David Sirota, staff writer with Pando Daily. Hang on just a second, hang on, David.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Author of three books, most recently Back to Our Future, his website, davidsirota.com. David, you're doing brilliant work. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Keep up the great work. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 17 minutes past the hour and, or no, 15 minutes past the hour. And Tom in Marshall, North Carolina, listening on Free Speech TV. Hey, Tom, on Dish Network. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I was wondering if you're familiar with a speech that John Kennedy gave, came to be known as the John Kennedy Secret Society speech.
Yeah, he gave this, according to the John F. Kennedy Library, on April 27th, 1961. It was an address before the American Newspaper Publishers Association. Here's a little clip from it so that our listeners know what it is you're talking about.
And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy.
That's his kind of Soviet. But he starts the thing out saying, you know, we don't like secret societies, as I recall. Let me see if I can find the beginning of this thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it.
Okay. Now, that said, the Kennedy administration worked very, very hard to keep a number of things secret. But particularly a planned invasion of Cuba in 1963, or a planned assassination of Fidel Castro in December of 1963. But, you know,
yeah,
what was your point?
I never heard you talk about it, so I guess I missed it because you are familiar with it.
Yeah.
Since I have you, there's a verse in the Bible that's in Revelation 11. 18. I'll read like eight words from it. It says that thou shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth.
Right.
Now it's about.
I quoted that in my book Prophet's Way. It's a pretty amazing line.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's like the evangelicals don't believe that man has anything to do or very little to do with the destruction of the earth. And it's, if you go back to a few chapters, like chapter 8, it talks about one third of the fish in the oceans dying,
yeah.
One third of the trees dying, one third of the grass dying.
Yeah.
But yet they don't think that man has anything to do with the destruction of the earth. I just wanted to point that out.
No, good point, Tom. And you know, Revelation is a book that is sometimes really, really hard to get your head around. There's so much symbolism and But there are also a couple of through lines, and that one from Revelation 11, I think it's 11:8, isn't that what you said?
18.
Thank you. I shall destroy them who have destroyed the earth, or he shall destroy them who have destroyed the earth. That's really, like, you know, send chills through you. Check out lasthours.org if you want my take on all that, Tom, and just watch that little 10-minute video that's there. Thanks a lot for the call. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's the original sexy liberal herself, Stephanie Miller, with the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour.
Hey,
Stephanie.
Stole that title from you, Tom Hartman.
Yeah, right.
You
right.
Mink.
Thank you. Thank you. But we all know it ain't true. The Stephanie Miller Show, by the way, stephaniemiller.com. You can check it out. Stephanie, you're going on tour again.
We're kicking off the election year, 2014 Sexy Liberal, Tom Hartman, and it's a whole new show. We are so excited. We're kicking it off tomorrow in Phoenix, and Jim Ward, the famous Jim Ward, and Chris Lavoie will be joining the show and emceeing, and Carlos El Rocky is new to the tour, who is hilarious, who played Lieutenant Garcia on Reno 911 and has been a dear friend of mine for a long time, and of course, the startlingly beautiful John Fugelsang.
Yes.
And we're going into Governor Bonefinger's territory, Jan Brewer.
Yes, yes. I loved Lieutenant Dangle. I thought that was just one of the most hysterical spoofs of police, Reno 911 that I'd ever seen. I turned so many people out of it.
We're hoping that he did not bring his papers with him, Carlos, and Sheriff Arparo will arrest him on stage because Sexy Liberal could use the publicity, frankly.
Yeah, well, please give him my very best regards. I think a lot of people don't realize that you don't just do a radio show, and you have a long career, a brilliant career as a stand-up comedian and a whole bunch of other things in the media that you've done over the years, but that you're back doing stand-up comedy, and you got a whole bunch of, basically a troupe that you've put together.
Yeah, well, as you know, I started as a dancer at the Itchy Kitty in Reseda out here, but that was where the stage worked.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're making this up.
Oh, Tom, you're so easily fooled.
I am. That's why, you know, you're the comedian. I'm the straight man here. Literally,
really, you know, it's become, you know, as you know, it's just such a sort of phenomenon, just much to our surprise, because it's really, you know, everywhere we go, we try to obviously localize it somewhat, and it's always different because it's, you know, depends on what's going on
right.
in the news and in politics. So
yeah, I saw your gig here when you were in Washington D.C. in the fall, and it was hysterical.
Oh, thank you, honey. Yeah, well, we do, you know, I do Q&A with the audience, and we do panel, and everybody does some stand up, and it's, but yeah, it just, we were saying it's just, I think at this point people are buying tickets to be on, just to be with each other, not necessarily to see us. Just
which is why I think a number of them have already sold out.
There.
I'm sorry, say it again.
I said, so you're not stuck with the crazy Tea Party people out there. You're in somewhere safe with like-minded people.
Yes, which is why I think some of them have already sold out. I mean, I was looking at your website.
Madison's been sold out for a long time, but Phoenix, and we pick a different sexy liberal cause, Tom, in every city that we give some of the proceeds to, and tomorrow some of it is going to Gabby Giffords Foundation.
Oh, good on you.
You know, she and her husband, Mark, who I just was lucky enough to hang out with in Arizona not too long ago, are, of course, you know, trying to work for reasonable gun control. And their organization is doing great work. And so some of the proceeds go to that tomorrow. That's what we picked for our Phoenix cause. So,
Mark is an astronaut, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Has he actually been up in outer space?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he just retired. But, yeah, he's such an impressive guy, and they have a book coming out. And so anyway, yeah, it's just a really – it's such a loving, sort of joyful audience too, Tom. It's interesting. We were saying that, you know, if you started in the comedy clubs, it's interesting. There can be such a kind of ugly, racist, homophobic kind of vibe to comedy clubs. And this is sort of – this paradigm is kind of turning that on its ear. It's sort of, you know, making fun of the racists and homophobes and – you know, proving that it can be even funnier, you know, hopefully. And like I say, and, you know, money goes to good causes, and we try and you know, spread the sexy liberal gospel.
Well, I think we're talking with Stephanie Miller. She's, in addition to doing a radio show every day, she's now going on tour once again. She's been doing this for a couple of years with the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, and she's going to be in Phoenix tomorrow night at the Orpheum. And for tickets, you can go to phoenix.ticketforce.com or stephaniemiller.com. I'm guessing there's a link.
Yeah.
But is it possible? Because I used to go to the comedy club on Sunset in Los Angeles back in the 70s when I would be in LA doing business. And the
right.
80s, I can't tell you how many nights I've hung out there and what. And there was that edge, and there used to be like the racist edge and the homophobia. But it seems like the whole gestalt of even comedy is changing. Or am I just hanging out with better people now?
Yeah, you're just hanging. you have that giant, well-endowed brain of yours. But, it's comedy for smart people. And I also think it's like I say, it's really making fun of the bullies rather than the opposite. Because I think that, like I say, that's early on. When I came up with the comedy clubs a long time ago, it was not just sexist, but it was sort of, racist, homophobic, just that kind of stuff. Whereas
a certain amount of misogyny, too,
Yeah, absolutely. But, for instance, our next show, we just got invited. This is, we don't usually do them on such short notice, but that one's selling out as well, is March 1st in Fort Lauderdale, because it's for Pride. It's Gay Pride weekend, and they invited us. And so, and Judy Tenuta is going to do panel, and Jackie Schechner, our current TV news anchor, is going to join us on panel as well. So, but that one's selling out, and I thought, look at that, Tom. I mean, look how quickly we've come in gay rights. I mean, since you and I met each other a few years ago, right? I mean, it's incredible,
particularly
with the Virginia case today. I mean, how amazing would that be, the state where, we finally, the loving, the whole loving situation.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's not my dog. That's my phone.
Yeah.
but, right, I mean, the whole, interracial marriage. I mean, how amazing if that's the case that goes to the Supreme Court and gets marriage equality nationwide, right?
Yes. Yes, I think it's absolutely true, and I think it's going to go worldwide. In the next decade or two, I just this is happening, and you're on Free Speech TV now.
I am your cohort on Free Speech TV.
Indeed.
I am so you class up the joint, and I bring everything down as
so people can check out your show. What is the time? Eastern time. It's
9 to noon Eastern time.
9 to noon Eastern, which would be 6 to 9 a.m. Pacific time.
Yep.
And you can do the math in between. Right? Okay. Stephanie Miller. StephanieMiller.com is the website. She's going on the Sexy Liberal. Stephanie, it's always great talking with you.
You too, sweetheart. Love you.
I hope to see you soon. Thank you.
You too, honey.
Keep up the great work. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Stephanie is just great. And she is. It is such a funny gig. It is really worth the effort to check it out. We'll be back. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and happy Valentine's Day, by the way. And don't forget, I have made that mistake in the past. It's not a good mistake to make. Joe in Nutley, New Jersey, listening on WBAI, where they are in their fundraising drive. So if you're listening to WBAI, give them a shout. I don't have the phone number here right in front of me, but certainly they're saying it. I'm sure enough on the air that most people get it. Anyhow, Joe, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. Pleasure to talk to you. Really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Yes, I just want to add something to that conversation you had with David Sirota regarding the pensions. And he seemed to mention, well, this is kind of a new thing. Well, actually, one of New Jersey's other horribly incompetent governors, Governor Christy Whitman, pioneered this back in the 90s by taking the pension funds. What should have been the state's contribution to the pension funds for public employees, and invested it in the stock market.
Right.
And she had all these long-winded rationalizations for it. And also, coincidentally, her husband was a bond trader on Wall Street, and there didn't seem to be any conflict of interest with that.
Yeah.
And when the stock market crashed in the 2000, 2001, all the pensions were short, and suddenly these people were screwed, to use one of your books.
Titles, yeah, and Joe, it's and that's not even a recent. I mean, that's not the most the oldest. I mean, the back in 1959, Jimmy Hoffa took the Teamsters pension fund and invested, took some money out of it illegally and invested it in a land deal down in Florida called the Sun Valley Development. And that Sun Valley land deal led to the Justice Department prosecuting him. Jimmy Hoffa went to Vice President Nixon and gave him a $500,000 bribe. And Nixon took the money and dropped the charges. And Hoffa thought, okay, that's the end of that. Everything's going to be fine. And then JFK gets elected. And what is the first thing that his brother Bobby does as Attorney General? One of the very first things he did when he came into office was he revived the Sun Valley land deal charges against Hoffa. And Hoffa ends up going to Washington, D.C., basically stalking Bobby Kennedy. And Carlos Marcello had to put a stop to that. And there's a whole long story behind that. But there's a long history of pension funds being messed with, whether it was, you know, by corrupt union leaders or whether it was by, you know, corrupt politicians. And what this, the lesson that we should get out of this, in my opinion, is not that pensions are bad things. Pensions. In fact, we need more pensions. Louise and I were talking about this last night. We have a little bit of money set aside for retirement, and it's like, should we invest it in the stock market? If so, where do you put it? What do you do? Well, I'm not a professional investor. I don't know what the hell to do with this money. It's like, you know, other than, you know, buy treasuries or something. It's like, and people shouldn't have to do 401ks. People shouldn't have to do IRAs. These were all things that were brought about by the Reagan administration, these changes in the tax code to move people out of pensions. And, you know, pensions are really, you know, with a pension, you know how much you're going to get for the rest of your life. And it's like a really good and reasonable thing. And this whole 401k thing is like, oh, let's shift the risk onto the individuals and let's turn everybody. And how am I supposed to compete with John Arnold or some other professional, you know, fund manager who these guys get the information, the, you know, in microseconds and have all these computers and everything? It's crazy. And so anyhow, the carryaway shouldn't be that we destroy the pensions or we defund them or we screw the pensioners. The carryaway should be that we need to more tightly regulate pensions and strengthen them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My mother was able to retire from the telephone company with a very comfortable pension, and definitely she didn't have to make any bizarre financial transactions or learn how to play the stock market.
Right, and the same thing with my dad from a tool and die shop with a machinist union. Absolutely right. And that pension then rolled over to my mom when my dad died. I mean, it was a really good pension. So, Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to WBAI. Michael in Clayton, North Carolina. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Great show today. I had a question originally for Senator Sanders about what we could do to reclaim our airways from corporations' monopolies.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Sirota touched on a related subject about PBS. And I have recognized and contacted my local PBS station and PBS concerning their program, The News Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Last night on the Comcast buyout of TWC, they presented a view on a pundit from Bloomberg News as the authority on the issue. Of course, he saw no problem with the massive monopoly Comcast would hold with cable and internet access.
Amazing.
That was the extent of their coverage.
Amazing.
Could you get the new FCC chairman, Mr. Wheeler, on your show to discuss his philosophy?
I guarantee you, Michael, he will not come on.
I know.
Yeah, we've tried that. We
looked up and read.
We literally, I mean, day before yesterday when I went off on Karl Rove and Misha Saakashvili, Sean actually contacted both of them and asked them to come on this program or their offices, and both of them declined to respond to us. But we actually try to get those. You know, it doesn't work. But I think that, you know, this if this Comcast Time Warner cable merger goes through, they're going to control basically not just the cable TV business, but more importantly the internet business in much of 43 of the top 50 cities in the United States. And that, to me, looks like a monopoly.
It is. The problem I have is my daughter works for Time Warner.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, get ready, you know. Because they'll, you know, whenever these acquisitions happen, then, you know, hey, we don't need two bookkeeping departments. We don't need two sales departments. We don't need, you know, and then a whole bunch of people get laid off. And then they go, hey, we're getting more efficient. I'm sorry. Inefficiency should be built into capitalism. Inefficiency, a certain level of inefficiency. Obviously, we don't want to be wildly inefficient. But I want to actually speak in praise of occasional inefficiencies, the inefficiencies that are necessary to have a market system where there's actual genuine competition. And everything should not be sacrificed on the altar of efficiency. Michael, thanks for the call, and thanks for pointing out, I don't watch the news hour, so I don't know what's been going on with it, but I'm sorry to hear that. Joe in Elmhurst, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Joe, what's up?
Tom, last night I was watching National Public Radio, a television show. Just happened on it when I couldn't sleep in the middle of the night.
Oh, that would be PBS. Really, you're watching it, yeah.
PBS. The Evening Report, I think it's called. And there was a guy in there, his name is Vince Vermucci. He's with the Mackinac Center.
Oh, the Mackinac Center is a right-wing think tank in Michigan.
Right, that's right. And he was on there with a professor from UCLA. His last name was Shaken. In any case, they were commenting upon this union vote in Chattanooga, the VW plant down there and the auto workers. And the thing that bothers me the most is they just have no morals. They will lie about everything. Two propositions were advanced by Vince Vermucci. The reason that this union vote should not occur, that there shouldn't be a union down there. The first was that if it happened that this plant became unionized, it would be run by the retirees. And the retirees have a totally different idea about a contract, because they're retirees, then do the workers. And so the workers would be taken advantage of. He implied and stated, essentially, that the retirees are the ones who vote on the contract issues.
But they don't.
The plant, and it's crazy.
They don't. If you're a retired union member, you don't vote on stuff that affects the active union members. I'm pretty sure. I mean,
they don't.
That's the way it was in my dad's union.
Well, I worked my way through college and through professional school, working in a factory, and I was a United Steelworker member
right.
for 10 years to keep that job, and I did really quite well. And they just, it's a great, unions are great. But the other thing that he said is that if the union gets in there, the workers are going to be hurt, because this whole proposition of this plant down there being unionized has nothing to do with the workers. The workers are going to be the victims of this big union dealing with this big corporation. That's Vermucci talking.
Jeez.
They have no.
So that's the guest, and the host is a guy from the right wing Mackinac Foundation. It's like nobody's there representing the unions, and this is PBS? Really?
No. Vermucci is an employee and spokesman for the Mackinac.
Oh, I see. Oh, so he's the Mackinac Center guy. Okay.
Yes, and the Mackinac Center. And the other gentleman was, I think his last name was Shaken. He was from UCLA.
All right. But was he pushing back?
Oh, he did. Oh, he couldn't wait. His head was blowing up when he was hearing this.
Yeah.
He didn't get enough time. But the other thing about it is that Volkswagen is the most profitable automaking company in the world based on their sales.
They pay over $50 an hour in Germany to their workers.
Yes. And in addition to that, they have these work group units between management and the employees. They go into things like safety, hours, better ways to do things.
Right.
And that's why they're so profitable.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the great lesson of Costco. Companies that treat their employees well do well. It's really, really simple. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for listening to WCPT, and thanks for the heads up. It's really sad to hear. 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I can honestly say, Louise and I own this program. We answer to each other and to you, and that's it. Welcome back. Jelena in Hazel Park, Michigan. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. You're on the air. Jelena?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, thanks.
You wanted to talk about fracking and water shortages?
Yeah, I wondered if there was anyone that had been looking at any water shortage attributed to the fracking practices.
I don't know of any specific ones, but I do know that fracking uses mind-boggling amounts of water and contaminates it and then reinjects it back into the ground with a whole bunch of chemicals that refineries used to have to pay to dispose of, but now they dispose of by calling them fracking chemicals. At least that's my understanding. But I don't know of any specific water shortages associated with it. Do you?
No, I don't, but I figured people are starting to look at earthquake activity around fracking, so I thought it'd be good to see if there, would be water shortages. And
yeah, the earthquake activity seems to be associated more with the reinjection of the wastewater than the fracking itself, although there are some suggestions of both, but very interesting. Jelena, thanks a lot for the call. I'm sorry I don't have an answer for you, but I'll keep an eye out, and I'll get back with you if I find one. Kim in Mooresville, Indiana. Hey, Kim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I noticed David Sirota that was talking about the PBS thing.
Mm-hmm.
A while back, Amy Goodman had the directors or producers for a movie called Citizen Coke.
Right.
That got squashed by one of the Coke brothers.
Yeah, because I think it's... I don't know if it's David or Charles. One of them lives in New York and is on the board of the local PBS station, isn't he?
Yeah, and I guess he gave $28 million or something. I actually sent an email to PBS asking them if I could dictate their programming if I donated $28 million.
Well, they're not going to answer because they're assuming that you don't have $28 million.
Well, I don't. I'm very disappointed because I listen to NPR in my car sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch PBS NewsHour anymore because the other callers were talking about how it seems to have taken a hard right.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, I'm progressive left and proud of it. And, I do try to listen to the other side. My father's very conservative and I love him and I try to understand. I don't get it. I really don't. But I am very sad to see, something that I felt was reliable news, objective. I also heard like a Monsanto commercial or a clean coal or natural gas or something like that.
Yeah.
Actually on NPR.
Yeah. All the corruptors of our commons are now starting to advertise very aggressively in these, quote, progressive media. On NPR and on what might be perceived as progressive television. Whether it's affecting programming or not is a whole other question, but I think it's a question that needs to be asked loudly.
Well, that's the thing. I felt like I could trust PBS, and I don't feel that way anymore. I'm not saying a lot of their documentaries are still pretty good. Frontline, now I'm casting and suspicious eye on that because of their whole thing on drones.
Yeah. Well, the last good journalist was Bill Moyers, and he was always independent. Or not always, but, as recently, the last decade or so. Kim, thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alpha Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the folks at the various companies that syndicate our program, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV, which carries us on the Dish Network and DirecTV satellite systems, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and all the others around the country, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and all the great folks at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. And a special shout out to Justin Duckham, also of the Talk Radio News Service, for some help today. Some great people over there. Josh in Mainville, Ohio. Hey, Josh, you wanted to talk about Chris Christie?
Well, yeah, a couple of things real quick. I got to meet you one time at one of the Hornblower cruises up in San Francisco, and that was really fun.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, yeah, but first of all, before I get to that really quickly, I'm a network engineer, and I just wanted to point out a little saying that you learned in the beginning is you don't bite a wire. Bytes are for disks and memory. Bits are for wires and file transfers and fiber optics and all that good stuff. But Chris Christie, I remember a couple of weeks ago you had Bernie. It was a brunch with Bernie, and you had asked him. I think you'd asked him about the when it first broke, and he had said it's just a distraction. And I'd like to counter that completely. I think it's an actual main component of the problem. I would be more asking the question of how many other governors are doing things like this now,
right,
and we just don't know about it, because I think that's the core of that party. I think that's those are the kind of people they are.
Well, and I think that at the end of the day, you know, it's interesting. Louise and I were channel surfing either last night or the night before last, between MSNBC and Fox and CNN. You know, just figure they're all three of them right next to each other, and one would go to a commercial, and I'd just flip over to another, and we'd watch for 10 minutes, and then they'd hit a commercial, and we'd flip over to one of the other ones. Whoever wasn't in commercial, that's where we'd sit until they hit a commercial. And Fox was all about Benghazi and all about what a failure Obamacare is. So they were all about taking down Hillary Clinton and taking down President Obama. And MSNBC, through the course of three different shows over three different hours, was all about Chris Christie, which is taking down the most probable Republican nominee for president. And CNN was doing fluff pieces. I mean, it was, you know, the giraffe got shot. I mean, not that that's a – well, I'd say that that's a fluff piece. I mean, it's deserving of a mention, but, you know, an entire segment and those kinds of things. And I'm like, what has happened to journalism? But here's where, you know, I think that the – with regard to Chris Christie – you've got the mayor of Fort Lee, Mark Sokolich was his name, I think, as I recall, and he's a Democrat. And he's like, I don't know why they're picking on me. And I'm wondering, and I'm just, you know, there's a certain line that I don't want to cross, which would be like, you know, defaming him. In fact, I probably shouldn't even put this in the context of that particular mayor. Let me ask this in a larger context. So many mayors, both Republicans and Democrats, in New Jersey have gone to jail or been indicted over the last few years for playing fast and loose with developer money, and, you know, Sandy money just kind of falls into that category. You just have to wonder, anybody who says, I don't know why they're doing this to me, you know, when the governor's office is clearly or apparently playing games with the, you know, developer money and Sandy money, you know, why wouldn't the mayors be doing it? I think we're going to discover that the levels of corruption in that state are far worse than anybody thinks, and that it's bipartisan. But although Chris Christie has a long history of being basically a goon. No, that's the wrong word. What do they call it?
A bully.
You know, well, it's a bully is like almost a compliment for him. Guys who are mobbed up, guys who are, you know, connected with if not organized crime, who are willing to engage in the kind of behavior that organized crime or organized crime guys engage in. And it's just
right. And the way he acted got him apparently, at one point in time to be the front runner for the candidate of that party.
Yeah. And we'll, you know, we'll see how this shakes out. But I have a feeling that we're going to find that there's not any, you know, just, you know, perfect folks in this story. Josh, thanks for the call. Rodney in Chicago Heights, listening on WCPT. Hey, Rodney, you want to talk about David Sirota's story and pension scamming?
Yes, sir. I seen a story on John Anderson on Mike Pantantonio's show, Ring of Fire, and basically, this guy Anderson, he's, you know, trying to rev up the lagging pensions that are behind because of not enough tax money. Mm-hmm. He's trying to rev them up for pension reform. That's what he's calling it.
Right.
To to divert it from a publicly managed defined benefit package to a 401k type of deal.
Right.
And guess who's in the 401k business?
Well, Wall Street.
John Anderson.
Oh, John Anderson. John Anderson. Of course. I mean, this is the thing. With a pension, Wall Street might be able to make some money, right, because they're handling billions of dollars sometimes in some ways. But if they can get all of us into 401ks and they can screw each one of us individually with their fees and their charges and things, they make so much more money. I mean, you know, it's just they make so much more money off 401ks and individual retirement accounts and Roth IRAs and all these things. And, you know, which is why Reagan started, you know, made all those changes in the tax code back in the 80s to basically do away with pensions and throw American workers into these 401ks. I was saying at the time we never should have done this. Anyhow, coming up Monday on the Tom Hartman program, of course, all the latest news and information you're not going to hear on the corporate-owned news media together with your calls. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. There's serious stuff going on out there. Check out free-don.org. Check out pdamerica.org. movetoamend.org. There's some important stuff going on. Get out there and occupy something. Tag your it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the show. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard, count on them to help protect what makes you, you. WIX, Wix.com, everyone deserves to have their own stunning site, and it's free. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. ITM Trading, America's trusted source for rare coins and precious metals. Web.com, you say it, they will build it. Granger, for the ones who get it done. Boston Beer, America's leading brewer of handcrafted, full-flavored beers. Geico, 15 minutes could save you up to 15%. And EcoWine.com, your trusted source for organic wines since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.